Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing support. We couldn't do it without you. We couldn't do it without the support of our sponsors. My Patriot Supply has been nice enough to build us a landing page called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can go there, check it out, see what you find. They've got 4 week supplies of food. They have 3 month supplies of food. I would suggest taking advantage of some of this. If you want to do it through my sponsor, please do. If you want to take care of it on your own, please do. Whatever you need to do to make sure that you are prepared and ready for where we're going, what we have coming our way, you'll feel a whole lot better. But if you want to just knock it out in about 10 minutes, you can do so at the landing page, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Right now, they're having a big sale on the 3 month supply of food. I'm not really sure how long that will last. So if you go there in the future and it's no longer available, my apologies, but they've had it available for a couple of weeks now. Hopefully it'll last even longer. So think about maybe stocking up on that, taking care of yourself, taking care of your family members, whatever. Just get yourself to a position where you feel good about where we're going. And also thank you to our sponsor, Chemical Free Body. This goes along the same lines of proactivity. You got to take care of your health. Do the best you can. We know that there's a lot of vitamin companies out there that are scammy. Vitamin industry is filled with a lot of that. That's why I appreciate Tim James so much. He's the owner of Chemical Free Body. He's really devoted to making sure that there are, like the name indicates, no chemicals in the supplements that they sell. They're fantastic. You can do, you can get Green 85, which is just the powder you add to water, stir it up and drink it every morning. That's what I do. Or you can take it a step further. They have a detox in a box bundle. I'll tell you what, you can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and take a look for yourself. There's a landing page there, a video about the success that I had going through the program. It was amazing. It leaned me out. I'm still on the product every single morning for the past 2 years. I have been drinking Green 85 and I feel really good about it. And I think maybe you should check it out too. So if you are so inclined, if you're interested in the things that Chemical Free Body has, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. The links will be in the description. You don't have to go searching for it. We'll make it easy for you if you're interested in participating with our sponsors, and we certainly do appreciate them. Well, I'll tell you, the timing of this interview is pretty amazing because we had been setting this up in advance of the passing of the Queen, and I am very pleased to have one of the most dangerous men in the world. He might not look like it, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of powerful people that do not like him. Mr. Kevin Annett, he is a human rights campaigner and author, a badass. I added that. And we're so grateful to have you here. Great to meet you, Kevin. How are you?
It's good to be here, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's see. Where do we start? I mean, you have been deeply involved in lawsuits and so forth towards the Queen. Can you tell us a little bit about what you have been doing over the last several years to hold these people accountable for the crimes against humanity that they have committed?
Well, the reality is they can't be held accountable because it's a system they control. So the only way that we've ever been able to get justice is by going outside their system. It began for me 1995. I was a United Church minister on the west coast of Canada. I discovered the crimes going on in the local Indian schools run by my church and the Catholics and the Anglicans, of which the crown, Queen Elizabeth herself, was personally liable because head of state, head of the church and all that, plus her role in abducting children from the Indian schools that we documented, which we'll get to. But all of that shows, you know, over the many years we've been campaigning, is that the system of crown, so-called crown authority, is not only soaked with the blood that we know over the centuries, but is, in a very immediate sense, is involved in crimes against humanity. So, you know, we're looking at a whole system, not just the figureheads, like popes and kings and queens, put there to keep everybody entertained, to make it seem like the system is legitimate and has authority. And behind it, of course, a lot of, you know, the old saying is that the biggest child rapist in town always has the best reputation. You have to keep everybody befuddled to hide the crime. And over years, I mean, the best way folks can look at this is my book, Murder by Decree. Murderbydecree.com is all these crimes documented over a campaign that's gone on over 25 years. We forced the apology of the Canadian government. As if such a thing is possible, you know, gee, we're sorry 60,000 died, we won't do it again, as if that happens. But in 2008 and beyond that, forcing Pope Benedict out of office in a common law court trial in Europe in 2013, all of this is like a tsunami building because the evidence is irrefutable. The eyewitnesses, the documents, and it really, like I say, indicts the whole system of church crown authority, right? So-called authority.
Well, yeah, This information, I'm not sure how I found out about it, but I did hear about the missing children, and that was, you know, I mean, it destroys your soul to hear about that with anybody, but then to have it come from the people that are held out to be above reproach, you know, the Queen of England and this monarchy, and this is, you know, we have all the jewels and they have ceremonies and these are good people, right? And what we find is that is just a mask to hide some of the worst human beings possible. This is, I would like to remind people, my audience is well aware of this, but the Queen knighted so many people that are known pedophiles. It is almost a pattern, and that is not accidental. You are known by the company you keep, and when your son Charles has his best friend is Jimmy Savile brought in to mediate the potential breakup of a marriage between Charles and Diana, you know, you're the crown. You have access to the best therapists in the world. Who do you bring in? You bring in a notorious child predator and a procurer of children for the royal family to fix the problem. It seems insane to me. So we know that
it's deliberate.
Yeah, of course, it's deliberate. It's deliberate.
But it's part of the psychological message by which a few or one person control the many. And that is the continual message out there is, look what we can do. The power of a state rests on their monopoly of violence. We can kill anybody we like. We can launch a war. We can take children and murder them. You know, it's like when Bergoglio, so-called Pope Francis, admits after going to Canada during July to sign a deal with the Chinese, by the way, which is a whole separate issue I'll get into. But he, on his way back to Rome, he says, oh, yes, it was genocide. Kind of like Justin Trudeau, the prime minister, said in 2019. Well, that's to say, yeah, we got away with it. We can kill anybody we like. That's still the doctrine of the Church of Rome. If you're not a Catholic, you don't have the right to live. We can wipe you out at any point.
Whoa. So your you're a person that has created big problems for these, for them. Can we talk about what you have done in terms of the trials that you have been involved in and brought forth to hold these people accountable? It seems like you said, they're rightly above the law. They create their own system. So you guys have created your own system of holding these people accountable. And could you explain how that works and what that process looked like?
Well, it's a law of nature. It's what we call common law that, you know, within their system, when you're in a corporation, yeah, the law of the corporation doesn't allow the chief officers to be prosecuted. And that's the function of a corporation to protect them behind the shell of their fiction. But as flesh and blood men and women, anyone is liable. It's the old adage in common law going back 1,000 years, be you ever so high, you are not above the law. And that's the basis on which they cut off the head of another King Charles I. in 1649, when they abolished monarchy in England, they said one person cannot rule over many. That's also blasphemy, because God is their authority, not a human being. You know, that's why the whole Reformation happened, where they said a pope and a king, they're not the head of the church. Christ is. And that created huge difficulties for people who use religion to control the way people think, so they can get away with these crimes. So it's like, it's right built into common law that these people are liable for what they do. And that's the basis on which we try them. And it's interesting, because when we in Canada, we tried for many years, like we have to work through various stages of naivety, right? All of us. And we tried to use the Canadian courts to try the Crown for genocide. Three different court cases I helped bring in the Supreme Courts in British Columbia and Ontario. Every time the judges said the same thing: we cannot put the Crown on trial for genocide or its churches, right? They're what they call ultra vires, beyond our jurisdiction. So we said, okay, then under international law, if you exhaust your own legal remedies, you go to international law. And it says, yeah, like the Nuremberg trials, anybody can be held accountable for their actions, and including, quote, heads of state or church. And that's what we did. And it was interesting, when we did that first international common law court case, it went from the summer of 2012 to February 2013. 2 weeks before the verdict came down, Pope Benedict resigns. Boom. And he had been named as a chief defendant. Well, three other cardinals resigned with him. They'll all be named in our indictment. That's because we went to the Spanish government, showed them all of our stuff. And the Spanish government, 5 days before Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, stepped down, sent him a diplomatic note and said, you can be arrested if you come to Spain, because you've been telling bishops to cover up child, not just rape of children, but their trafficking and the death of children. And you can be held accountable for that in our Spanish legal system. So he resigns. And people didn't make that connection. They didn't. Well, I mean, why the four people named in their indictment, they all stepped down. They know, even if everybody else doesn't, they know. You notice that Ratzinger's been hiding in the Vatican for the last 9 years. He's never come out. Any court in the world can issue an arrest warrant against him based on our verdict. That's the power of common law and citizen tribunals. They can force this change, but they don't want us to know that. They, you know, they created some bogus health reason why he had resigned and all that, like they always do. But the interesting thing, he had also signed a deal with Queen Elizabeth. It's called the Holyrood Agreement, that brought the Anglican Church back into the Church of Rome. And I find it interesting that she died when she did, just before, on 9/11, 2 days after she died, or it was very soon after she died. Elders, 13 indigenous elders, went to the United Nations and demanded that the Vatican be expelled from the UN. Well, not only the Vatican, but their sister churches. That would have directly implicated the Crown and the Church of England. And so you can't have the witnesses standing alive when something like that happens. She conveniently dies because she's the main tie to that whole court case that had, you know, not only indicted her system, but she abducted 10 Aboriginal children from the yes. Kamloops Indian School in 1964. They were never seen again, according to our friend William Coombs, who was the eyewitness. And William dies conveniently in the Catholic Hospital in Vancouver of arsenic poisoning, according to the nurse, right before he's to give testimony about that. They knock out, well, I mean, she's an inconvenient witness too, so she has to conveniently die in her sleep or whatever, just before the stuff hits the UN. I don't think it's accidental at all. I don't think it's a coincidence at all, right?
Let's talk about Kamloops, because this is a story that got on a lot of people's radar. This was, you know, it's first time you hear it, it's easily dismissible as just internet stuff and theories and whatnot. But then you dig a little bit deeper and you say, well, hang on a second. And first of all, if you know these people, you know they're capable of it. So let's start with that. And were they there at the time that this was said to have happened? Yeah. Yes. Were there witnesses? Yes. Did this? So who else saw this? Was it just one guy? Well, there's a lot of people that saw this. Is there? So it starts to, the more you dig in, the more you realize this is not just some easily dismissible internet rumor. This is an actual situation that happened. Can you fill in people on what happened at Kamloops?
Oh, exactly. You know, this story came out 15 years ago. And it's circulated now as if people are just learning about it. But no, I knew William Coombs, who was the witness. He worked in our campaign in Vancouver. We were occupying churches, holding protests. Well, I brought him on my co-op radio show in Vancouver, and he told this story, along with a guy who had just died, Jesse Jules. They both witnessed Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip showing up on October 10th, 1964, at the Kamloops death camp. I don't call them schools. Half these children never came back, right? And they were in Canada at that time. If you check the records, there was a quote royal visit in Canada during that time. They went out to a place called Dead Man's Creek, which is west of Kamloops. They had a picnic. William and Jesse both saw Elizabeth and Philip take 10 children away. Okay, now look at the numbers. 10 children, October 10th, 1964. They all add up to 10. And, you know, it had cultic significance, definitely. And so William was to talk about that. We subpoenaed Queen Elizabeth's, you know, and she never responded, which under the law, if you don't contest what's being said about you in a court case, it's a tacit admission of guilt. She's admitted to the guilt under the law. Nobody ever disputed. None of the defendants ever disputed it, right? They just tried to ignore it, hoping people would not notice. But William, just before he was to come over, it was February 2011, we had a forum set up in London, England. He was going to come over and talk about this. I'd gone over 2 days after I left. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police come to William's slum apartment, take him down to St. Paul's Hospital, incarcerate him. A nurse, Chloe Kirker, we have this testimony on video, and I met Chloe a couple of times. She said he had all the symptoms of arsenic poisoning. His fingertips were turning black. He had none of the symptoms of tuberculosis, which is, they claimed it was tubercular meningitis he died of. Didn't have any of. In fact, I know he was recovering. We had been occupying churches. William was feeling very confident. He had overcome his drug habit. He was not drinking anymore. He was like a man reborn. He was in very healthy, you know, for his lifestyle. He was very, quite healthy. He's dead within 48 hours. And then Chloe had to leave the country. She was pursued. These three guys came and questioned her, saying that they were with the police, but they didn't show any ID. They threatened her life if she talked about it. And, you know, it goes on and on like that. You can do that in Canada because natives are not citizens. They're wards of the state. So you can kill an Indian and there's never any consequence. Right.
Oh my God.
And so this happens all the time. But that example stood out because of the reaction and how it led to the Komala court trial that, you know, deposed Benedict and put the whole system really on the defensive. Right.
So if you can set up this international trial, which you did, and that's the progression of things where it goes there when everybody else says no in your country, what else can we use it for? I mean, my guess is that this is unlimited, right? You could try all of these people for a variety of things. Who's next? What's the
anybody plan? You like? Anybody is held liable. As a matter of fact, when the Pope admitted to genocide on July 29th, that meant that at that point, under international law, the Vatican, he should have been arrested. The Vatican's wealth can legally be seized as a self-admitted genocidal body. It's a piece of international law called the Transnational Criminal Organization Act, the TNCO. And if you traffic human beings, which the Catholic Church does, if you're guilty of genocide, laundering money for the mafia, your assets are null and void. Anyone can seize them because they're being used for criminal purposes. So the indigenous elders and our international court then issued warrants saying we're all authorized, not just allowed to do this, but compelled under the law to seize the money out of collection plates in the Catholic Church to occupy buildings. Native people have been doing this. They've been reclaiming the land. They've been booting the Catholic priest out of the local church and reclaiming that building. It's happening as we speak. That's a lot of the work I do on the ground, empowering people to do that. But that doesn't apply just to the church or the Crown of England. Any corporate body, any individual can have that action taken against them, not even by an international court, but by your own local common law court. 12 or more people can form these courts. And I published a book, The Common Law Training Manual, about that, among my 20 other books. But the knowledge is there, the skills, how to do it. It's just you meet that mental barrier with people. Oh, am I allowed to do this? Am I going to get in trouble? Well, look, I'm still alive after 25 years because I've kept in the public limelight. They're the ones who are more worried than we are because they've got a lot more to be guilty about. So I say to people, if you push against the system, it'll give, but you have to look at, examples of how it's worked. And that's why, urge people to go to murderbydecree.com, republicofcanada.org. It's really all on there, all the evidence and the methods we use, right?
So I think it's fair to say that you have very powerful people that are terrified of you, of what you're doing. Who are those people? Who is on the list? Who is actively maneuvering to stay as far away from you as possible? Obviously, the Pope faced you. You and your group. The Pope, the Queen. It doesn't get much bigger than that. My guess is Trudeau on your list. It's got to be, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, he admitted to genocide in June 2019 as well. So I mean, but he's chief officer. His whole role in basically handing over Canada to China, even allowing Chinese troops to be stationed on Canadian soil. That's geopolitically what's going on. China is really the rise in power, and Canada's its resource basket, just the way it was for the Americans and the British and the French. That's the role of Canada now in the world, to feed the Chinese expansion. Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, signed a deal, nearly $1 trillion in Vatican funds in July. The trip in July to Canada was a cover, camouflage. So he met with the Chinese and Prince Rupert. They're underwriting the whole Chinese expansion, the Vatican Bank money, which is interesting. You might have noticed the Pope told everybody to return all funds to the Vatican Bank.
Yeah.
He's taken over the Knights of Malta. That's the Chinese said to him right away, look, you can face lawsuits now. We want our money. You guarantee us that trillion a year like you promised. So, I mean, it's China in the background pulling the strings, just like they're doing in the war in the Ukraine. Have Russia and America to fight each other. They read Sun Tzu in the Art of War. They know what to do, right?
Right. They know.
right. So, stupid. But it's all coming together, right, in all this. And they understand how, when you say who's frightened, well, they're frightened about what I represent, because it's a recovery of a memory of people that we, it's not in the natural law for one to rule over many and to have corporate bodies get away with mass murder of children, right? And it's up to all of us, because we're the only ones who are going to take action on this. So, we have a whole rogues gallery of people in the first court case. I call them the Dirty 30. They were the original defendants. And included church and government officials, the ones who had originally not only fired me, but destroyed my family, my livelihood, took my children from me. This back in the 90s, because when I was reporting the land theft being done on the west coast of Canada by the churches, where the missionaries would grab native land and then sell it off to big companies, including the Chinese, what I was stumbling on too was a whole west coast human trafficking network that still goes on. Where the BC Native people go missing all the time. It's plugged into the organ trafficking network in China. And so anyway, they knew they had to wipe this guy out quick. The original people doing that are still doing these crimes in the West Coast. And, as we speak, so there's so many of them. It's almost a question, Charlie, of saying, well, who isn't doing it in the system, right?
No kidding. I just interviewed a guy, who it was reporting on Falun Gong in China about the organ harvesting and the trafficking of people and what was happening there. So I know it's very much real. It's fresh in my mind, of course, too. After that interview, talking about China's role in this, it's interesting to hear let's talk about what is China's role in Canada? Because it's been set up in a way where wealthy people from Hong Kong, wealthy people from Japan, the first sort of connection to North America, you get a lot of people in San Francisco, you get a lot of people in Seattle, Vancouver. It's a natural progression, I suppose, from the Far East to come to North America and set up along that West Coast. So it's not a surprise for me to know that Vancouver was inundated with Asian home buyers. I've worked in real estate for a long time. I watched the Asian home buyers come in and inflate the marketplace and whatnot. But what is the role of the Chinese government with regard to Canada?
Those are two different things. I've got Chinese friends who are very upset what's going on with China. They're not pro-China. You know, they're kind of traditional Canadian Chinese people. After 1997, when Hong Kong went back, there was a flood of real estate, and now Vancouver is one of the most expensive places to live. What's happening now is much more insidious. It was a plan going back over 20 years where the Chinese government systematically infiltrated the West Coast governments of Canada and the federal government. There was a guy, his last name was Faden, F-A-D-D-E-N, and he was head of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. And he said 20 years ago that the Chinese government has systematically taken over the country. And he was forced out of Richard Fadden. And, you know, he was forced out when he made that statement. But the point is, some figures, Chinese investment in Canada has increased 30 times in the last two decades. 30 times. They're the largest importer of Canadian oil and gas now, not the U.S. They're the second largest trading partner. The Trudeau government, the first thing they did when they came in 2016, I think it was Justin Trudeau's government, they passed a law called the Foreign Investment Protection Act. It allowed unlimited buying of the economy by China and the stationing of their troops to protect their investment on Canadian soil. Well, that's an act of treason, and yet there you go. We know that a lot of the disappearance of Aboriginal families is linked to that. If you look at the line, it's called the Highway of Tears in northern BC, the Highway 16. There's a lot of news on that. Human Rights Watch from New York came in and found that the RCMP are involved in killing Native women. Well, if you look at the Highway of Tears, it's exactly where the liquid natural gas sites are that China owns, and PetroChina. China's switching from coal to natural gas, and huge demand. So they're buying up these billions of dollars, you know, tens of billions of dollars in natural gas. So they're wiping out all the native people in that area, like the British did, like American-sponsored death squads have done, and all over the world, to get the resources, right? So that's an ongoing genocide. And it implicates every level of government, the courts, the churches, who are still the mediators in a lot of this. You know, they've owned the child trafficking networks for a long time. So, I mean, it's really happening as we speak. And it's tied into that you know, essentially the takeover of the North American continent by China.
Wow. And you meant, I knew about the Pope requesting the funds be deposited by the end of September. I knew about that,
right?
But I didn't know the Chinese angle to that. You're saying that the Chinese were saying, "Listen, you agreed to put $1 trillion into our investments in with us, and so therefore, so you're saying they were instructing or pressuring or you know suggesting to the Vatican that they do this in order to protect their assets so that they could then finance the Chinese?
We know that from sources we have developed over the years in the Vatican and other places that was going on. It was common knowledge among all the cardinals, and you know, loose tongues share all this information. We get this from people all over the church. That $780 billion deal, the Prince Rupert Agreement, July 23rd, that's to underwrite what's called the Road and Belt Initiative. China's buying up all the road systems, the transportation hubs all over the world to funnel all the resources into Central Asia, where about two-thirds of all the economic growth is happening now in the world. The Indo-Pacific region that China controls, that's where it's all happening. And the Vatican's the underwriter of that. Now, it's also, you know, I remember when the churches started getting sued after we held our first tribunal in June 1998 in Vancouver, all the lawsuits kicked in after we brought this stuff out, Native survivors of these death camps. The first thing the churches did is hide their assets. That's what you do. The Lord tells you, hide the assets, move out of the big buildings, hide the assets, right? And that's exactly what the Vatican Bank is doing now, right? So
So, okay, so right. Whether you're getting, whether you're a rich guy getting a divorce and moving money offshore to try and hide it from your wife, or you're the Vatican moving money to try and hide it from criminal courts, that's the reason behind it. Did you have anything to do with Cardinal George Pell getting arrested?
No, but I'll tell you who did. George Pell is part of the old Ratzinger crew. Mm-hmm. You see, there's a huge faction fight. There's basically two Vaticans. And there's the old guard, the Italian pro-Western mob around Ratzinger. And then there's the New World Order Pope Francis, who is diverting everything to China deliberately. Do you remember when Joe Biden went over to Rome a few months ago and he kind of fawned all over the Pope, right?
Yeah.
That's because, you know, they were right in the process of shifting, you know, the whole portfolio into the BRICS alliance. The Chinese run the banks in Asia. And he was basically pleading them not to. Well, George Pell was tied in closely with the Vatican Bank during the Ratzinger years. So they're trying to knock off the Ratzinger faction. They leak news about his, you know, his after hour activities with children to, you know, and then he can take the fall. But here's the thing. There's a standing policy for the last 100 years in the Vatican called Crimen Solicitanus. It was passed in 1929. It says when a child is raped, everyone is silenced. No one is to tell the police or they get excommunicated. So that's a criminal conspiracy to protect child rape. You don't last beyond the level of a priest if you don't enforce that policy. So every bishop, every cardinal, it's like saying, were there any good Nazis? No, because they're serving the system.
Yeah.
And the system requires that child rape is not considered a crime, first of all. Children are not considered human. This is the old Aristotelian Greek philosophy. It doesn't change. And I'll give you an example of that. This present pope is considered, you know, a liberal progressive pope, right? Mm-hmm. He's an American in 2017, and he beatifies, that means he turns into a saint, a Franciscan missionary called Junipero Serra. Mm-hmm. In California in the late 1700s, Serra works to death over 100,000 native people, men, women, children, on Franciscan plantations. And he gets turned into a saint by Bergoglio, who says, quote, we are inspired by his zeal. Okay, so how does a mass murderer get turned into a saint by a pope? Because there's nothing wrong with killing unbelievers. That's what you have to do. It's standing policy. If you're not a Catholic, you don't have a soul. When you're baptized, you can be legally enslaved, but you can't be killed. And if you're not baptized, you can be killed legally. And they don't put in those words now because people might wake up, but that's the practice. Why do you think they got away with killing so many children? Why is child rape so common and never punished? It's because it's a standing policy, and it helps governments, because if you get a lot of traumatized children at a young age, they tend not to fight authority, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, since we're talking about George Pell, let's stay in Australia for a little bit. Yeah. They've had their own problems with the Queen, with the Crown, and it coming in and getting involved in care homes, whatever you want to call them, you know, death camps, which I think is more rightly descriptive of them. What have you seen with regard to things getting turned around, changing, hopefully awareness being brought to Australia, because they seem to be finding themselves dancing with the same devils. They're doing deals with China. They have obviously a crown influence that is part of their upbringing in Australia. So where's Australia stand in all this?
Well, funny you should mention them, because I work closely with a lot of folks in Australia, including among the, well, they call them Aborigines, not Aborigines, which means aboriginal means not the original group, kind of an artificial Indian created by the colonizers, but the Aborigines. And I had a good talk with some of them the other day. They're in a very similar situation to Canada, but in terms of the history. But we work now with an alliance in 12 countries of people setting up common law republics who say we need our own sovereign nations outside this corporatocracy, outside this genocidal system. And as part of that, we have allies, indigenous allies with their own sovereign nations kind of affiliated with what we're doing. And their whole thing now is that it's getting so bad because you mentioned China,
right?
Where a lot of big money comes, a lot of people start disappearing. And the first to disappear are the poorest and the indigenous, because they're not protected even by the... Well, I mean, none of us are. Look at COVID, right? No one, they're paper liberties they can take away at any point if you're plugged into their system.
Right.
But especially the indigenous. And so there's literally sweeps going on. Western Australia and other areas where there's like uranium and a lot of minerals that the Chinese want, it sounds like Northern British Columbia, just big sweeps, like I mentioned, this highway of tears, just a lot of people going missing. And, you know, we know how and why and by who. So it's really similar. And I don't know, like, it's like talking about Native people here in Canada. There's just such a level of despair. If you're either a bought Indian on the government tribal council system, and then you're bought to shut up, you never talk about this stuff. And then there's the non-bought, but they're in a state of war. They're in hiding half the time. They're targeted all the time, like William Coombs. You know,
right.
Look what happened to him, killed by lethal injection, 2011, because he was going to talk about, you know, Elizabeth taking those kids. That's the reality. So it's so hard to work with genuine people. They don't tend to last long. So they tend to stay off the radar a lot. And I mean, that's kind of my general view on it based on what we're doing. But I think, you know, it's like any, quote, Commonwealth country. They're under that dual tyranny of Crown and the Vatican, right?
Yeah. Wow. What a horrible place to be stuck under. the Crown and the Vatican. I mean, one of them's bad enough to have them both. I talked to a guy who was explaining the care home situation in Nearcoal in a city right. called Townsville in Australia, and he described that to me. And I mean, I wanted to throw up to hear these things. It's only limited to the extent that we go out and actually search for it, but this is not a limited situation, right? This happens all over the place, right? This is Australia. This is Canada. This is, I'm assuming, any place under the Crown's authority. New Zealand probably happened back in India when it was under their control. Is this just standard operating procedure for the Crown?
Well, yeah. No, don't forget the crime never changes. It just changes appearance and location, but the same system of legal mass murder. And, you know, I remember the first article we ever got published after I got fired, and we took some of our evidence to the press before it was muzzled on this issue, the Canadian press, and it was beaten to death for theft of a prune. And this is about a little guy, Albert Gray, and he took a prune out of a jar, wasn't supposed to. United Church minister, Alfred Caldwell, beat him to death right in front of three witnesses. And then the same witnesses later, they were old men, but they said, oh yeah, well, two of them were still alive. They said, well, that's what they did every Sunday. Caldwell would line everybody up before church and pick out a child and beat him to death. And then he would stand over the dead body and say, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. Repeat after me. And they all had to repeat it if they wanted to survive. So it's like targeted killing, death camp. That's why we call it a death camp. But they brought in this whole song and dance cover story about calling them residential schools. Some children were abused. You see these mild terms that camouflage the real. They don't talk about murder, rape, sterilizations, tortures, any of that stuff that was going on. They say abuse, and we've apologized now, and we're healing and reconciling. It's just putting everyone back to sleep, right? And people want to be to sleep because it's too horrible to look at all of this stuff.
Of course. Right? Yeah. Yeah. This is not the sort of thing that people necessarily want to know, but they need to know. If you're going to move past this. So
well, also, I could jump in, Charlie, on
please.
That. It isn't that they need to know it. For their own survival, they need to know it. Because, you know, the whole stuff happening now with COVID was, it's a continuation of that genocide. It was tried out first on the natives. Nobody objected, so now they're doing it to us. It's been law in Canada under the Indian Act since 1874 that if you're on reservation and you cannot refuse medical treatment or a shot in the arm, you go to jail. You needed special, like, vaccine passports, special passes to get off the reservation. If you don't show it, you're immediately arrested. They tried all on the weakest among us first. And now they're rolling it out on everybody because it worked on us. So I say to people, look, this is in a way kind of payback and blowback for us not fighting this sooner. Now it's hitting all of us. But that gives us all a chance to wake up to what it's been like all this long. Right? What we've been in for so long. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been in it. So... International Tribunal of the Disappeared of Canada. Can you talk about that? What is that?
That's the book. That's the group. It was a group of scholars in Canada that came together to publish this book in 2016. The big cover up had been going on for years, but the government, get this, the government of the churches that did the crime set up the investigation into the crime. You know, like the serial killer. The serial killer appoints the judge and jury. That's what happened. The Truth right. and Reconciliation Commission, appointed by the churches and the government. And I'm saying, hello, am I the only one noticing this? But all the press reported as this genuine inquiry. So a bunch of us got together and said, look, we need a counter report. And that's what you find at murderbydecree.com. All of the evidence they gleaned out, because under the TRC mandate, you couldn't report a death of a child. You couldn't subpoena anybody. You couldn't force the churches to produce documents. You couldn't sue them for anything. And this is an investigation, you know, into their own crime. I mean, it was such a farce. And I remember sitting with Native people watching these TRC hearings, and they were in tears of outrage. These Catholic bishops could get up for half an hour at the mic saying, oh, we're just trying to help the poor little savages. And if you're a survivor, you could only speak for 5 minutes, and you had to show them your statement, and they got to censor it first, what they could say. That's what the TRC was in Canada. But the New York Times reports it as Canada comes clean about its genocide. I mean, at every level, you get this lie, you know, the three components, the theft, the murder, and the lie to cover it all up. That's what goes on at every level of this culture, not just about natives. All of us, we're immersed in it, right?
Yeah. Well, that brings us to, since we're talking about the law, the rule of law, let's talk about this. We've got civil law and versus criminal law, right? So civil law, compensation, personal injury, criminal law, penalty in prisons. How do we bridge this gap between getting people from, a civil law situation and into a criminal law situation where they're actually held accountable for this?
Well, that's the thing. I'm glad you raised that, because this whole issue of genocide in Canada was framed by the system right at the beginning of civil law. Mm-hmm. Abuse happened. It was like a tort offense. When you break somebody's window, you have to compensate them. That's how the mass murder of children was framed. You'll get money. You've got to sign off suing the churches in return for this blood money. And that's it. That's all you can get. Right. And that, which was a total miscarriage of justice, because it was criminal law from the beginning. Criminal law includes rape now. Rape under international law is considered a crime against humanity, because it impairs and destroys a whole generation that follows. Right. It's a genocidal act, really.
Yeah.
Especially when it happens to young children who can never get their life together and usually end up killing themselves. Right.
Yeah.
So the way you bridge it is the notion of liability. The reality is, it doesn't matter what the offense. Every human being on the planet is liable. And the spheres of law spill over a lot. What's this? You know, here's an example. They say the policy in the residential schools was cultural genocide. You always have that adjective put in first to soften it. Well, culture of genocide, okay, wiping out a language. Well, how do you wipe out a language? You don't do it politely. You do it by killing anybody who speaks their language. So yeah, mm-hmm. A civil law, crosses over into criminal very easily. Cultural, physical, biological genocide, like sterilizing kids, which was happening everywhere, still is through injections. I mean, those are all crimes against humanity. So you can't neatly separate the two when it comes to this whole regime of genocide. They're all one and the same, right?
Yeah. Are we making any progress, though? I mean, it feels like a bit of an uphill climb here, but then again, I read what you guys are doing and I go, well, hang on a second. This feels like we're going in the right direction. I feel like maybe we're actually getting some traction here. You guys feel like you're on the right track here? You feel like this is the beginning of something fantastic?
It's already happened. I mean, you don't force a pope out of office, and you don't force the whole system on the defensive. The whole thing of child killing, child trafficking, it wasn't there before our common law court trial in 2012, 2013. We brought that onto the world agenda, just like we did genocide. Mm-hmm. There were 2,000 of us doing it. So where does that power come from? The power of the truth has a momentum all of its own. You just can't ever give up. And I was fortunate to be at the right place, the right time, with the right evidence. And it's like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, you hit the enemy at what they love, and they always have to respond, no matter how small you are, right? Mm. And that's what you do all the time, right? You go in and threaten a collection plate on Sunday morning, which we did when we occupied churches, and boom, the next week the government starts talking apologies, back in 2008, right? That's how it happened. So people have to, our generation, or not our, but this generation now, unfortunately equates action with seeing something on the internet and sharing information. And that's not action. That's preparatory to action. It gives you knowledge, but then you've got to have the freedom to act and strike where it counts. And we've done that. That's been our policy all along. That's why we have a disproportionate result. And most of the weapon they have over us is right here. You know, I say in our workshops I give for people, I say the biggest cop you have to worry about is not the cop at the door, which that doesn't happen most of the time. It's a cop in your own head. Yes. The one that keeps telling you, you can't do this. If you do it, you're going to get in trouble. Don't trust Kevin Annett. He's going to get you arrested. You see that on the internet, right? All the big smear campaigns.
And yeah, they hate you.
It's all designed. Yeah, but I mean, it's what Hitler or any dictator does. You psychologically weaken an enemy before physically invading, and then it's easy. Yeah. And that's what they do all the time. 99% of it is psychological attack on it. Look at the proof. We can force change. We've proven it. And that's why you have to bury the memory of somebody like me and all the work we've done, because it shows people how they can win. So no, I'm very optimistic. I'm still alive. How can you not be optimistic after 25 years of being alive after all this garbage, right?
I know. I look at you and I say, I feel optimistic when I've known about you for many years. And I always thought, this is the balls on this guy, man. He's out there poking the bear, like the biggest bears around too. And rightfully so. And I want to make sure I'm crystal clear about this. I am glad you are doing this. I wish more people were doing this. I feel ashamed that I'm not out there doing this. I mean, I see that. And then I want to be a part of being on the right side. What, let me ask you this. What, if there are other people out there that hear this and feel the same way, what's the best way for them to get involved? How can they help?
There's entry levels for this because, you know, we don't run before we can walk. And I look at me the way I was 25, 30 years ago. And hell, I mean, I was totally naive. Yeah. The naivety is good because you get whacked in the head and you learn. If you were really streetwise to everything, you'd never do anything because you could figure it all out and say, well, what's the point, right? But we need to go through the stages of naivety to learn. And the only way you learn is through a personal loss. Here's the thing. We can, as long as we have options, we can always say, well, I'm not going to get involved in that thing of a genocide. I'm going to go work on this issue. It's safer. I mean, we all do that unconsciously, right? We tend to go to the path of least resistance. My advantage was I had everything stripped from me. They were out to destroy me. They did everything short of killing me, which you can't do because then it creates a martyr. Yes. If I was Native, I'd be dead. I'm a white guy. I'm a professional. So you've got to discredit and isolate. And they've done their damnedest to do that. You start psychologically by taking away my children, taking away my livelihood. That's usually enough to knock out somebody. But it made me madder all the time, more determined. And I saw my Native friends who were dying. I was still alive, but they were dying when they opened their mouth. And I thought, if they can go through what they did and still speak, then that gives me encouragement to keep going. So it's kind of a group action, but it's uniting those people who have lost everything and they have nothing left to lose. I mean, that's what Sun Tzu says in The Art of War. Never back your enemy into a corner. Never create a situation where they have to fight because then they're unbeatable. When you know you're going to die, as we all are going to die, mm-hmm. but when you know you're going to die and you have no options, then you fight to the death. What do you have to lose? Mm-hmm. And those people are unbeatable. They're kind of like the leadership cadre of a revolutionary army. Are always those people who lead the rest, who are more timid. And that's why they knock out those people is whenever they find them, because they're the ones who can inspire the others to then take the step and learn from themselves, right? And that's what we try to do all the time, you know, with people.
Yeah. Well, who's or what do you have in store for this current Pope? Anything for him?
Well, I mean, he's going down. Like Bergoglio is in a huge faction fight with the Ratzinger people, and this whole unpopular move he's done to tell everyone to give the money to the Vatican Bank. He's burning all his bridges. It's not so much the figureheads; the institution is coming down too. We know that. And now we say, the real question is, you say to the people in the churches, you got to get out. You got to stop giving your money to this genocide operation. I mean, I've worked with Catholic priests who split off, who don't give their money or allegiance to somewhere. And that's what people got to do. It's reclaiming their lives, not just politically and in the legal system and monetarily, but religiously, spiritually too. You got to declare independence. And that's really what the bigger issue is, not getting caught up in what Pope said, what, you know, we tend to demonize individuals as if they're the cause. Like somebody wrote to me and said, oh, the lizard queen is dead. We're all free. Right. And I said, well, no, they want you to look at her coffin as it goes around the country as if she's the issue. Right? Although I do like that picture, the Sun newspaper in London put out one. It shows Elizabeth as a 7-year-old giving a Nazi salute because her uncle Edward was a pro. He's the one who had the Edward supposedly because he married an American woman who was a divorcee, but he had to step down because the Nazis were cultivating puppet king when they invaded England. And he got his niece Elizabeth and all the go around like that, giving a Hitler salute all the time. They published that in the tabloid of the Sun. That whole kind of, it's a system that, and what it breeds in people, right? Like even the worst person is there. I often say to people, if you were put in the position, think of the person you really hate, okay, in the system who embodies for you all of these things. If you were raised in their culture and in that climate, and you were put in that position, would you really react any differently than they are now? Like they're the product of their, you know, of how they were raised. But I do believe as well, there's an intrinsic evil that can be tapped into in people, just like there's an intrinsic, not just goodness, but divinity in all of us that can be tapped into. And it's always that fork in the road, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Where are you going to go? Are you going to be on the good team or the bad team? Let's wrap it up with this. So I'm curious to know about, I read, you know, or I've watched your movies and read a lot about you, but what is the process of separating collaborators from those that refuse to go along with it? We see this, it's not limited to natives, of course, but in this particular case, you speak about that, about how they came in and were able to sort of divide, pry off a section of people that were willing to get on board with the collaborators, get on board with their oppressors in exchange for some things. It was interesting for me to read that. I knew it happened, but it was fascinating to what's that process? Because I think if we understand that process, perhaps we can be better at recognizing it when we see it in our own personal lives. But that process of splitting the group, how did that work in the native lands?
Well, over the last 2 years, when COVID came in, we put a lot of effort into setting up common law republic assemblies where local people can pass their own laws. We passed laws in communities nullifying the COVID measures, and the police state measures that went with it. And as soon as we started doing that, it's happened every time. I've had this happen so many times. It's always the same method. All of a sudden, rumors start. And they play on people's two things. They play on your fear and they play on your ignorance. So they say, hey, did you know this about Kevin Annett? Okay. And do you know you could get arrested if you don't go along? So to give you one example, in Parksville on Vancouver Island, they went to the organizers of the assembly and that I had helped organize. And they said, look, you're going to get a face arrest. The Mounties went to them. And we know from one of the people who was approached said, the Mounties said, you'll get arrested if you defy the COVID measures. We won't arrest you if you rat out Kevin Annett and turn against him. That's exactly what they did. So, you know, it's buying off people. It's the oldest game in the world. And it only works because we're all vulnerable that way. And when you say there isn't a strong line between a collaborator and an ally, because one can become the other back and forth. I've had people come over. I've had people in the system come to me with information. They're convinced listening to me, you know, former cops and that they come and help give us, you know, but it works the other way. So the thing to realize is we're all part of the problem. It isn't bad guys, good guys. When you realize that you're being complicit in the system, then you can pull out of it. Then you gain mental power over it. But if you're always a victim, you know, oh, look what they're doing to us. Nothing ever happens to us without our consent to some degree. We all, you know, we don't have to mask. We don't have to take the shot, but we all do because we're afraid. So look in the mirror first, look at your complicity and overcome it internally. And then you get strong and you can spot it happening when it does happen to the people around you. Right?
I'll tell you what. You're one of the bravest people I've ever met. Your ability to your commitment to getting involved and getting in right in the hornet's nest and making these people very uncomfortable. I really love that. Where's the best place for people to find you, to find your work, to connect with you and see what you're doing?
Well, the two websites I mentioned, murderbydecree.com. It's got a lot of my books listed there, which you can also get on Amazon. Republicofcanada.org, the movement for a republic in Canada, but now also in 12 countries. We have kind of a growing alliance of common law republic movements outside the system. Also, I do a show on Sundays, 6 p.m. Eastern, a blog show called Here We Stand. It's bbsradio.com/Here We Stand and 6 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. Also, write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com, because I do a lot of work on the grounds with people. When people get to the point where they want to take action, we do workshops, training, propelling people into action. So, you know, it's the best teacher. Yeah. One moment of an action is better than a month of learning it from a page somewhere. You need the direct experience of going up against the system to learn about it and learn about yourself, you know, at the same time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're somebody out there that thinks that you need to speak with Kevin, you're in a situation where he needs to be aware of it, I would suggest reaching out. Be strategic. When you're facing these people, they're very strategic against us. We need to be thoughtful and understand, as we've mentioned several times, the art of war. You know, do not attack where your enemy is strong. You know, be thoughtful about this. And if you're going up against what seems to be, like, as I've described in many others, this gigantic octopus, you better know where the hidden beak is. You get too close to it, it'll rip you to shreds. So I think it's worth noting.
And never do what they expect you to do. They expect protests. They expect petitions. They don't expect a few people to show up and see something they love, you know, an action group. And that's what forced, like I say, forced a lot of this stuff out. We did the unpredictable all the time.
Yeah. And please do not bring violence to them. They have a monopoly on violence. They know very well how to deal with violence. They like violence. We have to be strategic. So if we're going to take these people down, we need to think it out thoroughly and thoughtfully beforehand.
Outthink them, don't outfight them. That's one of the lessons of art of war. You can outmaneuver your enemy, and we're the majority anyway, right?
Yeah. That's Kevin Annett, everybody. All his links will be in the description. Please support his work, buy his books, follow him wherever you can. And Kevin, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Charlie. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And if you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. The website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter @macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody.